You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Tribe Super, your go-to Middlesbrough FC podcast. I'm Andy Muscoke and I'm joined by Craig Johns. And Craig, I just had a look at the championship table and I will admit I hadn't been following the results. I knew Middlesbrough had won, but I didn't realise they were sixth. How did that happen?
Incredible what a week does, isn't it? We come out of the international break, obviously everybody was in dour mood. There was all the injuries, and the last time we recorded a podcast, of course they'd beaten Peterborough and they had Barnsley and Cardiff to come. But you know, on so many occasions at that point in this season, we were talking about the fact that Borough had kind of got a good win and then not kicked on from it and not made that count. And, you know, it just shows you what this division is like. And, you know, two more wins, two very good wins against Barnsley and Cardiff, you know, albeit three wins in three in total against teams who Borough should beat. But, you know, quite often, as we've just said, don't beat them. And, you know, it's completely changed the complexion. They've climbed up the sixth of the table. It is very congested. I think, is it 5th to 11th who are all on the same amount of points at the moment? And it's goal difference alone separating, which, you know, again, just tells you how crazy this league is. But a great 7 days for Borough. 3 wins, 9 points, 3 clean sheets. A goal for Pierro, 2 goals for Sporra. As you see, a climb back up to 6th. They're back in the mix, and that's the important thing.
And is it a case that Warnock was always a believer? I know you, last time we had an episode, you spoke about the hope that he had, you know, the hope that it would kind of turn around, despite there was some grumblings in the crowd. So now he's got 2 wins. Now they're in the playoff position. Was it a case that he always felt this is what my Borough team can do, and we're showing you now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think ultimately we all know, you know, Warnock's kind of, you know, said that it might not necessarily be his final season, but certainly he's signed a 1-year extension because he kind of doesn't look beyond the current season. And at 72, we know the only reason he did want to stay at Borough was because there was a genuine belief when he assessed his squad, when he looked at his squad at the end of last season, with the right additions, he could make this a promotion-winning team. You know, he was excited about talents like like Tavernier. He was excited about bringing in talents like Pierro, which would have obviously been bumbling away in the background. You know, young defenders like Fry, like Dicey, like Bowler. He often spoke at the end of last season about that core group of players at the club and if he could just build on them. And, you know, we knew he needed a centre forward, and he got that in Nick Piazza, and then brought the club up, found Sporra, who looks a fantastic addition now as well. And as I say, even, you know, this season when he was frustrated because it wasn't going how he felt it should be going. But he still always had this belief. He often talks about, you know, you don't get too down after defeat, you don't get too high after wins. So, you know, in the same sense, he's not going to now be sitting there thinking, you know, all comfortable and thinking, you know, well, this is going to go. He will know that this season will have many more ups and downs. You know, Borough aren't going to go undefeated for the rest of the season. It's just not likely. But, you know, this past week has been more like the Borough that he knows they are capable of being.
You mentioned two players there who've certainly impressed in the last two games. Sporra, 2 goals, 1 assist over the games between Barnsley and Cardiff. And Pereiro as well. Warnock spoke about how impressed he was with him in the last game. What have you made of their performances?
Yeah, brilliant. I think Sporra, since he came in, has looked absolutely terrific. He's really intelligent. That's what I like about him. He's a very intelligent centre forward. He runs and runs and runs. He puts, he presses high, which is why Warnock likes him. They have worked on that with him, but it's his movement off the ball as well. He makes intelligent runs in behind, and that, you know, even if it doesn't always benefit him, it opens up defences, it splits defences and creates gaps for other players. I've been so impressed with him. Obviously, there was the whole game where he missed a couple of good opportunities, and You know, now 2 goals in 2 will have done his confidence the world of good. And as for Piero, I mean, you know, it was no secret that it was a bit of a frustrating period up until this past 7 days, the past week. Fans were obviously so excited about signing this young Argentine starlet to, you know, if you were speaking to people in South America, they were telling you that this is a player who, you know, they couldn't believe he was coming to sign for Middlesbrough in the Championship. And they were describing it as a coup for the club. And obviously he took a bit of time to settle, and that frustrated many people who felt he should have been in the team sooner. But I think you even look at that Reading game where he did start and he didn't have the same kind of impact that he's had in the last three. It makes sense that he was still getting up to speed. He was needing to get used to the tempo of the Championship and also the different kind of style of play of Middlesbrough and what's required of him in Middlesbrough's midfield. And you know, somewhat you could say somewhat forced upon Warnock to have to put him in when he's put him in for the last 3 games because of all the injuries. And I think certainly helped by having Matt Crooks alongside of him. They've got that, you know, newfound bromance going on there, Crooks and Piero. And, you know, I think Crooks's mobility and agility in that midfield just allows Piero to be that little bit more positive. And, you know, when he's on the ball, he's absolute quality.
We've got lots of questions from lots of listeners and we'll get onto them in a moment. Some people have been talking about that new kind of partnership in midfield. But when things weren't going well, Craig, a few people suggested, and it was just kind of social media noise, that some of the players that came in the summer weren't really Warnock's type of player, maybe not even his choice, with some of the accusations thrown down. And, you know, some people were speaking the likes of Pereira or Inespo, or might be one or two of those players. Yeah, he seems to be getting the best out of them. Did you ever think that was the case, that they weren't his first choice, that someone else was planning for the future and Warnock didn't really like them?
Well, it was an interesting summer because I think we spoke at the time about the summer transfer window and the fact that it did feel very kind of split into two. And you started where they always needed a big recruitment drive in the summer. The squad was small. It almost started like the first half of the season, the focused on what you would think were more traditional Neil Warnock signings, players like Piazza, players like Matt Crooks. They were getting those type of players in and bulking up the squad. And then it seemed to change direction in the second half of the season. And of course, you know, around that point, it was announced that Kieran Scott would be coming in as the head of football. Piero was somebody who we knew about for a lot of the summer. It was just a deal that dragged on because it was difficult to do. And then, you know, very end of the window, we then got Sporar and Saliki in. And that did feel very different to what you would, you know, class as a Neil Warnock signing. But I think it's important to note that, you know, while the club did kind of take this new direction and are looking at this new direction of kind of signing what you would class as maybe hidden gems or players who have future high sell-on value, you know, all three of those players were signed with the okay from Neil Warnock. Certainly with James Lea Saliki, he was a find from Kieran Scott. Kieran Scott kind of recommended him at the club. And Neil Warnock had conversations with Kieran Scott before he officially arrived. He liked what he heard from Kieran Scott. He particularly liked that Kieran Scott is still a scout who likes to watch players in person. I know it was a big gripe of Neil Warnock's in the fact that some of Borough signings or some of the players that were recommended to him by the Borough recruitment team prior to Scott's arrival were players who they'd kind of, you know, watched or saw in video and just on stats and spreadsheets. And he always maintained that to get a good sense of a player, you've got to go out and watch them in person. So I know he particularly liked the fact that Scott has that mentality too. He feels you've got to go and watch them in person too. So, you know, when Scott recommended Saliki, he does have a contact in France too, he said, and he went to him straight away and got the okay from him. And equally, you know, Piero was somebody who was recommended by people that Leo Perkovic knows. And again, Neil Warnock watched him, spoke to people he knows about him, and got good vibes about him and brought him in. And I'm sure the same happened with Sporar too. So it's important to note that while they're maybe not traditional Neil Warnock signings, he understood why the club were moving in that direction. and he approved of all three signings. It wasn't like the club went behind his back and brought them in without his say-so. He approved of all three signings. And I think because he didn't play a lot at the start, particularly Piero, a lot of fans forget in that initial press conference after he signed. I remember Warnock was asked about, you know, should fans, you know, kind of curb the enthusiasm, the excitement for Martin Piero and not put too much pressure on him. And I thought at that time that would be the perfect time for Warnock to say, yes, like, look, he is young, he is going to need a bit of time. Let's not, you know, put too much pressure on his shoulders too early. But quite the opposite, he talked with excitement about Piero and about how good he is and how good he will be for the club. And so I think that said a lot at that time about, you know, just how, you know, excited even Neil Warnock was about bringing him to the club.
Yeah, and we're seeing the benefit of it now. We'll get into the questions in just a moment. Just a final question from me to you, Craig, about the last two games. Have you sensed a change in mood around the place or people you're speaking to? I know it's just two wins, but football's a very fickle game, isn't it? Things can change within an instant. Is the mood, I mean, our conversation just now seems a lot more positive than it did the last time we had an episode. So I assume that's something you've maybe felt with who you're speaking to for stories and what have you.
Yeah, well, I think in terms of the fan base, definitely there's been a big switch in move for the fan base. And I think the big thing about this the past three games in those 7 days was that finally Borough won consecutive games. They'd never won back-to-back games until they beat Barnsley after following up from Peterborough. And of course, in the Championship, if you want a challenge at the top end of the table, you've got to be a team capable of putting runs together. Inconsistency is what makes you a mid-table side. And that's exactly what Borough had looked like for so much of the early part of the season. So I think in terms of the fan base, you know, there are still one or two who kind of, you know, haven't quite made the mind up about Neil Warnock yet, aren't completely convinced by him, and that's fine. You know, all opinions are valid in football, but I think in general, you know, there's an appreciation of, particularly with how many injuries they had, to the way this squad has come together and you know, backs against the wall, got them three wins. In terms of, you know, people within the club, not much has changed. I would say, you know, it's definitely boosted the confidence. Of course it has. But, you know, there was always this belief within the group. There was always this spirit. Neil Warnock always felt like it would turn this way and you know, they would eventually get a bit of luck and get things going, you know, above Neil Warnock on the board. You know, they were feeling the same. Steve Gibson was, you know, quite encouraged by a lot of what he saw from Borough, other than the results. And he felt like, you know, this could turn and it could actually be quite an exciting season. As we say, there were three teams Borough should beat, but nevertheless, they did beat them. They kept three clean sheets. There were quite dominant performances, all three of them. So I think the manner of them is just as pleasing as the fact that they did it. And that's why, you know, we can be a little bit excited about it.
Definitely. And then hopefully another 3 points this weekend. It's Burnham, isn't it? So another side down in the table. They've only won 1-5. So you would expect, with Borough being in good form, boosted by the previous couple of weekends, that they'll definitely get.
Just lost you there, Muzz. We've lost your sound, Muzz.
My back?
Yes, we've got it. Yeah.
You know what happened? Podcast I did as well for another football club, mum. It's these mics, but I'm back now.
I was gonna have to carry the podcast, one man team there.
Well, you always knew, Craig. We were just we put the call out for questions, and there were plenty of very good questions, and we'll get into them. Just first and foremost, though, if you guys are watching on Facebook, hit that share button and get the video into your news feed. And if you listen later on the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe or follow, as Apple now say to do, and leave us a review if you can. And of course, share it with your Borough supporting friends and family so we can ride the roller coaster together. Now we'll go into the questions. A lot of people asking about players returning, Craig, and there's one here from David Bentley, who says he thinks they need to sharpen up on decision making. Could it be worth an extra place? It could be worth an extra place or two. If they really click, the team could batter most teams, he thinks. So he's quite positive that if things go right, things will end well this season. But do you think Neil Warnock needs to keep the same team whilst they're winning, even if the injured players return?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And I think a lot of it, you know, depends on who the opposition are. because different opposition will have different vulnerabilities. And I know, you know, there's always that sense of focus on yourself. And to an extent, yes. But, you know, I think you give yourself any advantage you can. And in doing that, you look at your opponents and you look at where their weaknesses might lie. So, for example, you know, on Saturday, just gone at Cardiff, I think Neil Warnock put Uchik Piezu back in the team because he knows that as a defensive unit, Cardiff are, you know, quite big and quite physical, but were quite vulnerable. And I think that worked absolutely brilliant because Piazza just bullied their centre-backs all game. And that gave, you know, the likes of Sporar and the likes of Piero that little bit of extra freedom, feeding off the work that Piazza did up top. Whereas in the Barnsley game, they're a side now who strangely, I think, want to play out from the back. Which is weird to see of a Barnsley team, I think, and clearly isn't working for them at the moment. But that's what they like to do. And so he went with Watmore and Sporar up front because, you know, more than Ikpiazu, they're going to kind of press high. They're going to give a high energy in that final third when out of possession. And that's going to unsettle Barnsley's defenders. And as it showed, you know, force them into making mistakes as they're playing out and Burrow could stay on the ascendancy. So, yeah, I think things like that depend on the opposition. You've got to look. The certain part of the team, and I know there are other questions that will probably come to that will cater this as well, but, you know, the certain changes that have needed to have been made because of the injuries, which I quite like. Matt Crooks in the midfield, in the deep lying midfield role, for example, rather than number 10. I know Neil Warnock really likes him as a number 10, thinks he'll score goals as a number 10, but I actually think Burrow have got better players for that number 10 or they can go to up top as they have been while Matt Crooks has been deeper lying. And I think that suits them better. And as I said, as I mentioned earlier with Crooks and Piero, I think Crooks, you know, this Crooks' style of play, Crooks' agility and his ability to kind of, you know, impose himself in that midfield a bit more than Johnny Howson makes him a better foil for Martin Piero. He partners, he complements Martin Piero better and allows Piero to be that little bit more positive. So there's certain changes when injuries return that I wouldn't like to see made, but equally, you know, again, depending on the opponent. I mean, at the moment, you think Dele Fry is such a good player. Like, I love Dele Fry since I've watched him since last season. I think he's absolutely fantastic. And obviously, you know, 36-year-old Sol Bamba is not going to be able to play every game for the rest of the season. But at the moment, him and McNair have been brilliant the last couple of games. So how do you bring Dele Fry back into that? Unless it's again, say, the West Brom game in a couple of weeks, who, you know, are going to be one of the bigger clubs. You might go to a back three and then you'd want to bring Dele Fry in. Or you might want to strengthen and steel up your midfield a bit. So you'd put McNair back into the midfield and that opens up the door for Fry to come back in. Little things like that we've got to think about with individual games. But yeah, it's understandable why you'd look at that and think, why change a winning team? Because they are playing so well.
A lot of questions have been on the defence and the return of injured players, but specifically the defence. Leon Jackson and Peter Rogers both asked, you know, about the shape of it once injured players return. And I suppose that lends to what you were just saying there about Fry. When Burrow are performing so well, they're keeping clean sheets. You know, even if the better players are fit, do you break up a defence which is performing very well?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a difficult dilemma for Warnock to have, but equally, I'm sure one he'd rather have than the one he currently has, because, you know, they are only one or two more injuries away from, you know, being in utter crisis mode again. But yeah, I mean, there's so many kind of dilemmas that he could potentially be posed with when players start returning. I know we've got a question coming up on Howson at right back and Dykesdale, who's been so good under Neil Warnock at left back. He took a bit of stick in the early parts of the season, but I've always maintained that he's good. He's limited. He doesn't attack. But I don't think Neil Warnock wants him to attack. I'm talking about Lee Peltier here, sorry, you know, at left back. But we know how good and how reliable Mark Ball has been at left back for Neil Warnock. So, you know, does he take Lee Peltier out and bring Baller straight back in? Well, I actually think that would be harsh on Lee Peltier, with the exception of his yellow card record. I think he reads the game so well and he's so solid defensively.
In terms of the likes of Fry, when are we expecting them back, do you think? Do you think, is it going to be soon or is it going to be a couple of weeks after the international break? What have you got any kind of insight for our viewers and listeners?
Well, I asked Warnock about it after the Cardiff game, expecting that the week kind of gap between that and Birmingham, we might see a couple of them return. But he said Dykesdale was there probably the closest, but he's actually not too optimistic that any of them will be back this side of the international break, which obviously means, I think that's three more games, isn't it, until the international break, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, it is still a bit of a worry, as I say, because you are only, you know, potentially one or two injuries away, or Matt Crooks is on that dreaded fourth yellow card at the moment, so one yellow and he has to sit out a game with suspension. You know, you're only a couple of little things like that away from, you know, then going into what are trickier games coming up. With you know, even more depleted options than you're already dealing with.
Mike Brown asks, if Dykesdale is fit, is Housen the best option at right back, especially as his return to midfield would only see Crooks and the Crooks and Pereira partnership split up? So we've kind of covered it briefly, but do you want to go into a bit more detail with your answer there, Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, I'm somebody who's kind of defended Housen a lot as a midfielder, certainly last season. You know, I was really, really kind of impressed by Johnny Housen as a midfielder. He's so comfortable on the ball and he reads the game well. But that was last season when he played alongside someone like Sam Morsy, who had a bit of tenacity and a bit of bite about him, which Housen perhaps doesn't have. Now, the last few, Johnny Housen's played either right wing back or right-sided centre-back. He's kind of variated between the three positions as Borough have kind of switched formations in between games. But particularly at right back, as Mike alludes to, I've been so impressed with Johnny Housen because he has had struggles in central midfield this season. You know, I think we alluded to it earlier, the fact that, you know, he's not as kind of agile and as mobile or as physically imposing as what Matt Crooks is. And therefore, when we've seen Housen partnered with Pierrot, he's looked a little overrun in midfield. Borough have looked very exposed, because when Pierrot does look to go forward and does look to be positive, Housen doesn't quite have that same imposing figure to protect the back four as a sole deep lying midfielder. But as a right back, I couldn't believe I'm sure it was the Barnsley game. I don't think I'm mistaken to say it was the Barnsley game, where he was up and down that right wing as an attacking fullback for the majority of the game. It's such a brilliant performance. I couldn't believe how good he was in that right back position. And certainly in that Borough setup, I think he's probably more suited to that. But, you know, having said that, as we see, Dykesdale is, you know, such, his injuries are a concern, but he has been such a reliable player under Neil Warnock. So, you know, it's going to be a difficult one when he does return.
It certainly is. But as you said, it's going to be such a good dilemma to have when you have all these fifth players returning. You're saying, well, hopefully at that point, Borough will still be winning, moving up the table. And you're going, well, do I break up a winning side? So it's hopefully going to be a very good dilemma to have. Dave McNally asks, is the narrative of he's been forced to be more attacking because of his lack of options unfair on Warnock? The common sense solution to injuries was youth players, but, you know, Warnock didn't do that. I think he also asked how much credit does Warnock deserve, and in particular, the tactical switch against Barnsley.
Yeah, so, I mean, what he's alluding to there in the Barnsley game, he did kind of, I think, like Peterborough, look to set up with a back three, but Barnsley kind of surprised a little with their setup and only had one striker. So he quickly changed to a back four and kind of, you know, reverted, like quickly changed the way Borough were set up. And it just allowed Borough to be a bit more positive than three at the back would have. But yeah, in terms of the first part of that question, it's a really good point from Dave, and something that, you know, I've highlighted myself, and it's not been an aftertimer, because I made this point in a piece I wrote during the international break when, you know, there was a lot of pressure and there was a lot of, you know, bad feeling towards Warnock at that time. And, you know, I had to don the tin hat to write it. But, you know, I spoke about in the piece I wrote then about kind of, you know, fallacies and things that are being thrown about, which I just don't quite agree with. One of them was that, you know, Borough play horrible football. And actually, that just didn't marry with what I'd watched. I understand results had been frustrating, and therefore, you know, like, this isn't a beautiful Pep Guardiola-style football inside. Of course it isn't. Warnock will make no apologies for not wanting his team to kind of play the ball and mess about with it at the back. They do look to get the ball into the final third quickly. But once they get it there, they have a lot of quality there, and they do like to play it about. They're playing with a decent intensity. They're knocking about between them. And as one of the questions earlier alluded to, sometimes they're just let down by their own decision-making. Tav's particularly guilty of it recently, where, you know, he might, you know, take a shot on when there's a better pass available, or, you know, he might take an extra touch when he could have played an earlier pass through. But he's certainly not the only one who's guilty of that. There are others. And, of course, we have had issues with them not being clinical enough to missing chances that they should put away. And I appreciate when you come away from a game like Blackpool, for example, where Burra did play some lovely stuff in that first half, but only went in 1-0 up and then lost the game 2-1 after a bad second half. No Burra fans come away from that game saying, I know we lost 2-1, but that first half was really good. You just don't do that after a 2-1 defeat at Blackpool there. So, you know, but in isolation, that's frustrating. But in the grander scheme, when people were saying the football was awful, that just didn't marry with what I was watching overall. And
I was just going to say, obviously they've won the last two games. So do you, but has Warnock just stuck to what he's known? A little bit of changes here, but in general, the overarching approach to games and tactics hasn't really changed from what he was doing when they were not winning games.
No, yeah, so that's a good question, and it's something I alluded to after the Cardiff game, because I think what DFC is absolutely spot on in terms of, you know, the forcing Warnock into a more attacking approach is kind of what a lot of people have said about the current injury crisis and the last three wins. But actually, you know, if you look back and even the pre-season, I keep talking about the pre-season. I remember talking to him pre-season down in Devon, and he was speaking a lot then about wanting to experiment and see, you know, how expansive his midfield could be and how much they could cope with being left a little bit exposed. And I just remember the last pre-season friendly of the Devon tour, Matt Crooks had officially joined the club that day, and he went straight into the starting lineup, and Sam Morsey was the sole midfield, deep-lying midfielder that day. And in the early parts of that Plymouth game, Matt Crooks had kind of looked to sit a little deeper and almost play as two deep-lying midfielders. And Warnock, in the first 5 or 10 minutes, kept continuously shouting on to Crooks and telling him to push further forward, because he did want to, you know, Plymouth at that point were the best opposition Burra had played in pre-season. He wanted to have a look at that. He wanted to see how Burra would cope with just one deep-lying midfielder and the second midfielder pushing on. And, you know, I think rather than the last three games seeing any change of kind of, you know, direction or a plan or, you know, attacking intent, I think it's just started to click now. It's started to gel. We mentioned earlier, you know, when Piero and Howson were partnered together, it just didn't quite work. They were too exposed and they were overrun in midfield. And, you know, I think a big part of winning games, you've got to win that midfield battle. Crooks has been doing that, whereas Howson wasn't. And so I think, as I say, it's just clicking now. It's gelling. And also, we can't ignore that it was three, you know, poor teams that were beaten. We can't ignore that. But equally, I don't think it's a change of kind of style or direction or tactics. I think it's just clicking and gelling more now.
The 12th man on Twitter asks, Craig, who, in your opinion, are the best two to play up top? And then he is right. He says a lot of people are asking about Sammy Amiobi and just what on earth is going on there.
Yeah, well, we'll start with Sammy Amiobi, because that was a question that came in from a lot of people, and I was asked about it on Twitter yesterday as well. Only spotted it this morning, so I was off yesterday, so apologies, I didn't spot that, but I guess answering it now, so it's all fine. Yeah, so a couple of questions even asked, is he even real, which I did laugh about. But no, it's a really unfortunate situation with Sammy Amiobi. He came in this summer as a free signing from Nottingham Forest, and I think it was in the first week of pre-season and training he injured his knee, and of course he hasn't been seen since. And it's a really strange situation, because you know, we've asked a lot about Sammy Amiobi and never got any clear answers on him. It's a difficult one, because clearly there's a reason they don't want to tell us. You know, if they do know, I mean, the answer you get from the club is that at the moment they don't know. And I appreciate there has been some comments from Burra fans along the lines of, you know, a club in this day and age with the, you know, medical facilities, etc., that they have, surely they do know. And I think the last time Warnock kind of went into some kind of detail with it, it was something to do with fluid around the knee, and they were therefore not quite able to find out what exactly was the problem, what the problem was. It's a really strange one, though. I honestly, I'm not certain whether there is more to that and we're just not being told, or whether it is just genuine that they just can't find out what the problem is. But clearly there's a problem. Sami Amiobi, you know, there isn't a time frame on his return. The club put out a gallery today of 5 of the injured players out training and, you know, getting closer to being back. And it noted in that gallery that, along with Darnell Fisher, who we know is out for the full season, Sami Amiobi still doesn't have a time frame on his return. So that's still the case, and it's a tricky one because, you know, we can continue asking the question, but it's clear that, you know, the answer from the club is that for whatever reason there isn't an answer to give. As I say, whether that's because there's something they can't tell us or they just don't know themselves.
But, it's, you know, such a shame because he's got such talent, and I know we've not seen it because he has got a horrible injury record as well, but at when he is fit and he's on his day, he would be a very, very good championship player. So such a sad that just injuries seem to get the better of him.
Yeah, and that's why Warnock brought him in. You know, remember when he first signed, you know what, speaking of Warnock at the time, he kind of described Amiobi as that player who, when he played against Warnock always hated him being on the ball. Because, you know, while he hasn't consistently done it throughout his career, and that's why he's never reached the top of the game, he is a player who, when on the ball, can produce moments of magic. And that's why, you know, Warnock said he always used to, you know, a huge sigh of relief whenever Sami Amiobi passed the ball when he was playing against Warnock teams, because when he was on the ball, he can make things happen. He can do things. But, yeah, it's a really strange situation. The honest answer is, unfortunately, I don't know, you know, what the situation is. Never got any clarity on it. And it's quite clear that, you know, at the moment, the club don't really want, you know, to tell us if they do know. Or, as I say, it might be genuine that they don't know, but I do kind of feel that there possibly is more to that going on. But clearly, you know, possibly something that we can't know.
And on his other question, which was about who you think the best two are up top, is there a pair that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna cop out a bit here, and I kind of already alluded to it earlier, and the fact that, you know, it depends on the opposition. I think there's various ways where it can go. I like both the Sporar Watmore partnership and the Sporar Piazu partnership. I think in equal measures they complement each other when against the right opposition. I think, you know, we mentioned the West Brom game coming up. I'd be surprised if Borough went 4-4-2 in that one. And it wouldn't surprise me if, in some capacity, presuming they have the options to do it, Tav dropped in as the, if you like, the attacking midfielder, and they only went with one striker then, because Tav gives that little bit extra energy, and he almost becomes like a third central midfielder, which you might need in that game. So they have various options. And like I say, I think, you know, I alluded to the fact that against Barnsley, they try and play out from the back. So Watmore and Sporar were the better two for that game, because they'll press more and they'll put pressure on the ball, on the defenders trying to play the ball out of defence. Whereas against Cardiff, you know, Ikpeazu was really physically demanding. He bullied the Cardiff centre-half. That dragged them around and created space for other players. And Ikpeazu, of course, you know, played a big role in certainly Pierrot's goal. And he was just brilliant in general on the day. So, yeah, I think a bit of a cop-out, but I do like both of those partnerships, and both have value depending on the opponent.
If you're watching now live on Facebook, why not put your top two forward players into the comments, and we'll discuss any that do indeed get in there. Ted asks, Craig, is there much to the link with Brazilian right-back Hayter? And also, have you heard much from Kieran Scott about how things are changing, how he's going to change, and what the plan is going forward?
Yeah, well, we'll start with the second part of that question first, Kieran Scott, because it's funny that question came in today, because funnily enough, I had just gone to the club today and asked, you know, if there was any chance, now he's had a couple of months to settle, could we possibly speak to him? And you know, the comeback from the club was quite positive. It's not going to be quite yet that he's still, we were told in, yeah, I was told like in a settling in period. I think at the moment you see him at almost every Borough game. You see him at a lot of the under 23 games as well, because of course, you know, as head of football as he is, he's overseeing the academy as well. It's not just the first team. So he is, you know, it's important to remember that he is still just 2 months into his time here at the club. And his appointment is a more longer term thinking role. Obviously he's now planning for kind of the future direction and probably for life after Neil Warnock, which they've brought him in now. I've said this before, it makes sense to bring him in now when they have brought him in, because it allows him a full season to assess Middlesbrough, assess, you know, the club, assess the direction that it needs to go in, assess the squad, et cetera, and I think he's still in that stages of his job at the moment. He's, as I say, kind of assessing where the land lies, essentially, and then he can start to put the plans in place for, you know, next season and beyond. But positive, kind of sounds from the club when I asked that question, that we will hopefully hear from Kieran Scott sometime soon about how he's kind of settling in the job. First part of that question, my mind's gone blank, you'll have to remind me again what it was.
It was about the link to Hieta, the Brazilian right back.
Of course, yes. Sorry. So those links come in the other night from South America. Don't know the validity of it, unfortunately, and I think understandably so, that as was the case in the summer too, until it's very far down the line, which of course it can't be at the moment because we're not in a transfer window, the club and anyone kind of connected to the club won't want to say too much on that, because they'll want to keep that as under wraps as possible. Now, it came out in the South American press, as did the Piero links and the Rodrigo Muniz links in the summer too. And as we know, you know, both of those links proved right, proved reliable. Obviously, they managed to get Piero, they didn't, Muniz. So I think, you know, there's probably validity in the links in Borough's interest. One thing we did see in the summer was, while the initial links, they were quite reliable in terms of identifying that Borough were interested in these players, the kind of, you know, claims, you know, the kind of details of the transfers, if you like, were very wide-ranging and not often as accurate when you actually did speak to people at Borough. Things like, you know, the price of transfers were not quite accurate, and in other parts there were kind of details of what was happening in the transfers and what was holding certain things up that weren't as accurate either. But certainly in terms of identifying players that Borough were interested in, they were generally quite accurate over in South America. And we do know that, you know, here we know Borough see a lot of value in the South American market right now. There's a lot of clubs over there kind of struggling financially, and they do produce very good footballers over there. Of course, the two, Argentina and Brazil in particular, you know, two of the greatest footballing nations on the planet. But as I say, a lot of their clubs are struggling financially right now, and as a result, are open to selling players for decent prices. I mean, you know, there was, again, we talked about the kind of figures that go around, but to my understanding, I think up front, the way Borough were negotiating these kind of transfers were kind of with add-ons and bonuses in terms of payment. But up front, Borough, I believe, paid about €4 million for Martin Piero this summer. Now, tell me, you know, where on this planet you're going to find a player I'm not quite sure on the exact currency thing, but I think that's just over £3 million. Now, where on earth are you going to find a player who has the quality that Martin Piero has for about £3 million? You're just not. There's so much value in South America at the moment. And not only that, but the new work permit laws after Brexit make it kind of, if you like, I don't want to say easier because I don't really know how easy it was before, but certainly, you know, they are capable of bringing these South American players in under the new work permit laws. So I think there's definitely, you know, whether there's something in it or not, I don't know. There's talk about, you know, kind of international wanting about 10 million euros for him. Again, you know, Borough are not going to pay anywhere near that up front. The figure quoted with Borough is 5 million euros, which would be more likely. But, you know, international have got to accept that themselves. Again, as I say, you know, Borough structure these deals in a way where they pay so much up front and then more after a certain amount of time, or based on if they do certain things, quasi agreements, if you like. So yeah, there's scope in that they could potentially set up a deal like that. And as I say, we do know they're interested in the South American market through Leo. They have good contacts there. And certainly I don't believe that, you know, with Muniz after Piero arrived, I don't believe that was the last player that, you know, they'll have on the radar. So certainly want to continue watching with that Heitor Rodriguez.
Yeah, exciting times. We've got one from Ian who asks about Jed Spence. Obviously, he's on loan at Forest, but
we just lost Muzz again. But I know what the question is.
I'm here now. I'm back now.
Yeah.
Goodness me, technology is just a nightmare. So yeah, Jed Spence on loan at Forest. Question comes from Ian, and he's just saying, is like the options have already got at Borough, the fact they're linked to another right back. Is that what did it for Jed Spence at Borough? I mean, does he have a way back in, do you think, at the club?
Well, it's an interesting one, because I think under Neil Warnock, probably not is the truthful answer. I think it's quite clear that, you know, in the end, Neil Warnock just decided he wasn't reliable enough, and he wasn't, you know, didn't have the right attitude, if you like, as well. And, you know, there was a question a couple of weeks ago when things weren't as rosy as they are now at Borough. Somebody asked him, you know, he had the injury crisis. Do you regret letting Jed Spence go to Nottingham Forest? And his answer was, you know, just simply no. He just batted it away with a straight no. Nothing more than just no. And then he was kind of asked the follow-up of, you know, you must be seeing how well he's playing at Forest, etc. And Warnock just joked, yeah, I'm really happy for him, and it'll mean that it increases his value for next summer, which again, I think was a telling answer. Now, of course, we don't know at this stage whether Neil Warnock will still be here next season or not. If Borough get promoted, you know, I'm not ruling out that Neil Warnock stays for another season at all. He still absolutely loves this game. He doesn't know what's around the corner in terms of health and et cetera, et cetera. But if Borough got promoted and the land was clear, if you like, he'd be staying for another season. Of course he would. And in that circumstance, as I say, does Jed Spence have a Middlesbrough future? I don't think so. But if Warnock were to leave, Jed Spence is still a good young player. He's doing well at Forest. Could he come back and impress a new manager? Of course he could. But like you say, they could have a lot of right backs. Don Fisher will be back in injury next summer. If Heitor Rodriguez did join the club, he'd be a really bright young right back. And then Dykesdale's still a brilliant age too. So, you know, it's difficult to see much of a future for Jed Spence.
We'll finish on the final question then from Alfie Thwaite, who says, do you think the squad has what it takes to A, maintain this run, and B, their position in the league, which would of course mean if they did finish sixth, they'd be in the playoffs come the end of the season?
Yes, I mean, quite simply, the answer is yes, I do believe they can. Of course, football is a game, as we've said, that, you know, could swing one way or the other so quickly, as we've seen with how quickly Borough's fortunes have changed for the better in just three games in the space of just 7 days. And I do think that this season is still going to have many, you know, ups and downs. I do think there'll be times where, you know, they might lose a couple of games and drop down the league again. I think for now, the key is staying as close to possible as they can. They did that in the first half of last season. You know, we went down to Birmingham just last game before Christmas. Was it 3-1 and a 4-1? I think it was, wasn't it? At St. Andrews just before Christmas last year. And Borough were sixth on Christmas Day. and you thought, this is excellent. You know, we're going to go into a January window now. We knew the club had quite big plans for January. And in January, you know, they signed some good players in the likes of Bolasie and Cabano. And you were thinking, you know, we'll kick on now and we're well positioned by staying where we have stayed, so close to the top six. Well, and for whatever reason, you know, for various reasons, which, you know, we discussed at the time, it petered away and just didn't go the way we expected in the second half of the season. But I would expect that Warnock knows a lot more about his team now, and would be a lot more confident now in that not happening this season, and showing more style and more character to be better in the second half of the season than they were last season. And so for me, yeah, the key is just keeping pace, staying as close to that top six as possible. And who knows what happens in the second half of the season. And, you know, the year at that part was to continue the run. I think the encouraging thing now is, you know, as we've seen, as long as you keep pace, three wins can put you right up there. And the important thing is, having looked so inconsistent, we've finally seen a side who are capable of putting three wins together, which, you know, for confidence, for reassurance, that was exactly what Borough needed, albeit against three poor sides. So, you know, sterner tests come. I think Birmingham, off the back of a victory over Swansea, will be a better side than the last three. After that, Luton and West Brom, you know, far more difficult games, but still winnable games. Maybe not the West Brom. I think you'd be happy with a point in that one, but certainly Luton is a winnable game, even if they have had a good start of the season themselves. So we'll still learn a lot more in the next few weeks as well.
Important to have that momentum going forward, though, isn't it? I mean, momentum's a key word for me in football, and to be having positive results like they've had, hopefully another win this weekend coming. We'll go into them tougher games with a bit of buoyancy, you know, a bit of hope in there. Fingers crossed. It's more of a tabletop clash than just a West Brom facing Borough, and Borough somewhere in the mid table. But yeah, amazing to see that league table when I checked it out just before we came on air to see Borough sixth. And yeah, long may the form continue. You can head over to Gazette Live to follow Craig, and we'll be no doubt speaking to Warnock later this week for his press conference, which is which day?
I would imagine Friday, nothing confirmed, but it tends to be Friday morning.
There you have it. So head over to the website, but plenty of stuff on there at the moment. All the Middlesbrough FC news. And please remember to like and subscribe to the podcast through whichever platform you're listening through. Once again, thank you very much for joining us.